life is hard, so why not sand down some of its rough edges if you're given a chance? And tech these days is giving us lots of chances. You can get dinner delivered to your door, one click, a package is on its way. You can share your location so you don't have to text your partner to ask when they'll be home. An AI chatbot can help you word an awkward email. But in this explosion of convenience, have we maybe lost something along the way? Something that makes us human? It's the question at the heart of a recent column by writer Catherine Jaser Morton, in which she argues for friction maxing in our lives. In other words, embracing the small inconveniences and doing things the hard way sometimes. And it struck a nerve. The piece has been read and shared more than anything she's published before. So have we gone too far in the pursuit of convenience? What might we gain by allowing life to be just a little bit less efficient? I do want to hear from you on this. Is there something that you do the hard way on purpose? And has it paid off? Catherine Jaser Morton is with me. She's a columnist for New York magazine, The Cut. Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
Can you please explain what friction maxing is? Where did this term come from?
Yeah, you know, it's a term that I came up with just totally on the fly. I have a 15-year-old son, and it's that kind of suffix of maxing is a little bit of like jokey language that's somewhat common among teens. And I think this was just kind of the accumulation of months of feeling like there was this prevalence of escapism all around me, that it felt like life itself was being escaped from at every turn. And I just kept noticing little tiny examples of this, and it just sort of built up until I had to write about it.
So you wrote about it and it really has struck a nerve with people. What kind of reaction have you had?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It got a lot of response from the tech community, from people who work in AI, who are trying to build AI to be more humane, I suppose. And that's not really an area that usually I speak to or have an audience in. I do think that people who work in tech are thinking about this all the time because it's becoming completely normal, like utterly taken for granted, that you would do the easiest possible route to any given outcome without thinking at all about whether or not that's what you really would want to do.
Why not? Like what has motivated you to think about the harder way of doing things?
Well, I mean, to begin with, like, I don't think that it's necessarily the harder way. I do think that, like, we've come to see all of these everyday experiences, like, you know, dating people face to face, or like going to a restaurant, or, you know, picking up the phone instead of texting, as like hard. And I mean, that's kind of where my disagreement begins. I'm like, you know, who says these are hard things? And it's only in the kind of development of all of these technologies of convenience that suddenly are framing all of this everyday life as hard, because here there's an alternative for you. But I'm just not convinced that these things are hard at all.
I think sometimes the reasoning is that if we can outsource this thing, this time waster thing, as we kind of frame it in our minds, we've got more time to focus on the important thing. So if I use ChatGPT to do simple tasks for me, I've got more times for, like, I don't know, contemplating the meaning of life. This isn't something that you buy.
I mean, I like that idea. And I do think that there are certainly tasks and, you know, professional environments where AI really makes a difference and it really makes life easier. Like, I'm not here to deny that. But I do think that a lot of what people do when they have extra time is just look at their phone. I mean, if I'm speaking from personal experience. So I'm just not convinced that we're all seeking more moments to enjoy life with this kind of like empty time.
I remember sort of thinking about this when labor-saving devices, or even the idea of a four-day work week, that our forebears would have dreamt of not spending their time, you know, rubbing washing up and down a washboard. And I wonder what they expected to do with their time. Maybe they thought they'd be sitting around making art or something like that. We're just sitting around scrolling on our phones.
Well, I mean, it's funny because, you know, when, for example, domestic labor-saving devices were made available to the marketplace in like the 1950s, like, you know, dishwashers and clothing washers, the idea was the housewife would have like all of this extra time. And what it was found that, in fact, there were just more things to do. The housewives didn't, I think, experience that leisure that they were promised. And I do think that modern life, the way we experience it, makes everyone feel a little bit harried in this way that's really hard to define. There's like a million things to sort of little prompts and things to check and deal with and confirm. And, you know, a lot of this happens on our phones. And I do think that we have a desire to escape that because it does feel uncomfortable. But I think that maybe we're sort of escaping the wrong thing. Like maybe there's something else that we want to escape. And instead we're escaping like human contact, you know, with other people.
You are listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Catherine Jaser-Morton. She's a columnist for the New York magazine, The Cut, and she wrote a piece on what she calls friction maxing. That is maybe not relying on every single convenient option available to you in this world of tech and doing things a little bit the old fashioned way. The piece absolutely struck a nerve with people. It's been shared heaps. Lots of fun little resistance moments in the text line. Anthea says, I purposely did not use remote controls. Jacqueline hand washes her dishes. I don't want a dishwasher, but I do want a clothes washer. Sonia says, I never use autocorrect. I found it helps with retaining my spelling and reading intelligence. So lots of small acts of defiance there. Also with me is Bree Lee. She's an author and a freelance writer. She wrote the drafts of her most recent book by hand. Bree, I feel like you're friction maxing to the max here.
Yeah, people are pretty shocked by that, which is funny because obviously keyboards are relatively recent in the history of human writing.
What did you get out of it as a writer?
Well, I've been freelancing for about 10 years now. And when I began my freelancing career, I did a huge amount of interviews that required me to transcribe. And as a result of that, I became incredibly fast at typing. I can type as fast as people talk. And when I'm writing, I can write type almost as fast as I can think. And what I realized with this latest book, which was challenging and was that that's no longer an asset, being able to sort of manifest every single thought that comes into my head. The first thought that comes into my head was not giving me great results. Faster and more quantity is of whatever you're producing is not automatically better.
So you're sort of forced to gather your thoughts a bit more because you've slowed yourself down.
Yes, absolutely. So with my previous novel, my first novel, you know, the first draft of that was almost 200,000 words, which is like sort of 2 to 3 times as long as a book should be because typing was cheap. Mm. I could just get so much kind of bulk output. And when I started this new book, it's called Seed, I was quickly generating this draft and it just wasn't special. It wasn't meaningful. It wasn't high quality. And I stopped and I began to handwrite in the way that I handwrite my diaries and the way I handwrite my journals when I'm trying to be very honest with myself and do much more deeper and more critical thinking. And I mean, there's a huge amount of research that's been done about the sort of mind-body connection, about creativity, but I very, very much lived that. And it's been the single biggest creative and professional breakthrough of my whole life and career.
Well, now I really want to read this book. Catherine, listening to Bree's story, the very specific example, what are you thinking of?
Gosh, I mean, I just love that story. And it really makes me feel like this question is really like, what is the point of the things that we do? Like, what is the point of writing? It's not to generate, you know, hundreds of thousands of words. It's to create something meaningful. And I love that, you know, Bree was able to kind of realize like, wait a minute, I'm doing it and I'm feeding the wrong dog, so to speak. Like I'm not doing this the way that I should be doing it. I find that such a great, vivid example. And I've never handwritten anything that I've tried to publish. And now I'm wondering if I should start.
I highly recommend.
Wow.
I am interested to know where friction maxing is useful and where it's, trying to almost like self-flagellation. Bree, what do you sort of think, where are you choosing convenience and where are you choosing friction in your life?
Something that I have been thinking about for a little while since realizing how sort of dissatisfied I am with how much smartphones, so not just social media or the internet, but specifically a device in my pocket that I carry around that has access to those things, changes my life. And so one thing that's really worked for me is like figuring out all of the functions of a smartphone that I actually have other objects that I can use to do. So I don't have my smartphone in the bedroom anymore, so I don't use it as an alarm clock. And usually I'll try and wear a watch to work or on any like general day so that I'm not checking my smartphone for what the time is. And why I think that's relevant to friction maxing is because the smartphone as a single device has promised that it can sort of replace all of these other objects and all of these other sort of helpful tools that we used to have in our lives. And I'm like trying to slowly chip away at all of those other promises.
Catherine, where have you been adding back friction into your life after sort of having this light bulb moment?
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, I use Spotify to stream music, which, you know, is something that I'm very ambivalent about. And I'm trying to basically move away from playlists and be thinking about music in terms of artists and albums and not like vibes and feelings, which I feel like I was sort of moving in this direction, kind of incited by this algorithmic kind of music service that I would come home and, oh, I want like a relaxing after work vibe. And there's something very mindless about this. And also a lot of the music ends up being AI itself. And I lose touch with artists and, you know, pieces of work. So I've been listening to albums deliberately as a way of helping with that. And that's been really nice for me.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm chatting with Catherine Jaser-Morton and Bree Lee about adding back a little bit of friction into the parts of your life where you think it's relevant. I'm asking you what you are doing to do that. And I'm really delighted by the various ways that you are adding some friction back into your life. Katie's son chooses to service his own car. Takes time, leaves a mess in the driveway occasionally, but worth the effort, she says. Another says, my granddaughter has gone to live in WA. Rather than staying in touch via social media, I decided to write her an old-fashioned letter. What's more, she's written back to me. Looking forward to this new way of staying connected and sharing stories. The only problem is the cost of stamps. Bree, I'm interested to know whether you've taken those lessons from your writing, which obviously has been very transformative for that particular process, into other parts of your life.
Yes, because of that sort of simple equation that I mentioned before about realizing that just because I can do something faster doesn't mean I'm doing it better. And that sounds sort of very simple, but when you learn a kind of life lesson like that for yourself through practice, it has a pretty big effect. And so I've just been thinking, I don't even like this language that we have about like sort of slowing down or doing less or being less productive. But it's true in a way. It's interesting to me. I thought that writing my book by hand would be a slower process. And you know, if you compared typing versus handwriting sentence by sentence, absolutely, like five times slower at least. But the sort of finished manuscript I ended up with was at such a higher caliber. Mm. It was like third, fourth, sort of fifth draft level of like sort of, I think, quality and conciseness of the writing that actually in terms of months, it was much faster. Months and years on the project was faster handwriting than typing. And that's been so revolutionary for me to think about doing things once and doing things well instead of just trying to just speed through every possible task, either work or personal.
That interesting, that idea of hidden efficiency there. And Catherine, you found that friction is a gift you're giving your children.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how parents are getting their kids to enjoy reading nowadays without friction. And that's, you know, my kids became readers on a really long road trip that we took in the car across Mexico over 10 days, and we didn't have iPads because we just didn't own them at that time. This is a few years ago when my kids were younger, and we just gave them books, and the boredom and in many times like the stress of that trip, because it was a little bit of like we had a lot of car trouble, you know, they found that they could escape into a book, which is like, you know, one of the true gifts of being a human being. And I think that when you have, you know, a screen or an iPad or some other device nearby, it's really hard to compete with that. And friction, you know, it's sort of like a book is requires friction in order to sort of show the pleasure that it offers. You know, a kid needs to be bored to pick up a book. And so I feel that sort of very frictiony road trip gave them the gift of reading. And I'm very grateful for that.
One more question for Bree, a person on the text line is asking, how did Bree break the phone noise overnight addiction, trying but failing, sleeping so badly?
So what's the question is like how to not
how do
have
you
your
break
phone
it?
Your,
yeah.
Oh, I tell you what, it is hard at the beginning. But like physically you need to make like create a space in a different room in your apartment or house, and that is where your phone charger lives, and there is a space for your phone there. And whenever you begin, so a big thing is habit stacking. So for me, the phone goes into that onto that space, into its charger when I'm like doing the kind of brushing teeth, washing face, getting ready for bed. Like I have made stepping away from my phone a part of my nighttime routine. Mm. And just give yourself a fortnight. It will take a while, but it is absolutely worth it.
Catherine, Bree, thank you both so much for joining me. Catherine Jaser-Morton is a columnist who writes for New York magazine, The Cut, and Bree Lee is an author and freelance writer.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.